The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The old sales approaches just aren't working anymore. It's time for a new way of thinking about your sales game. Welcome to Stand Up, Stand Out, or Stand Down with Malcolm Evans, the Sales Accent Guy. Sales can be a tough world where rejection is part of the day-to-day. Your customers are doing the research to save a dollar. Do you still stand out as the best choice? You will soon. Here's your host, Malcolm Evans.
And a very good afternoon or a very good morning wherever you are in the world. My name is Malcolm Evans. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know me as the Sales Accent Guy. We have a special show today, jam-packed with the sort of stuff that you want to hear about. Over these last few weeks, we've been sort of peeling back the onion. If you're new into the business of sales, or you're looking at a new venture, you're coming into business, this is a blueprint over the 13 weeks of starting from nothing and getting the ideas and the perspectives to succeed. But as long as you try it, 2015 is going to be a big year, but only if you're prepared to look at new ideas and give it a go. Okay, without further ado, each week I have been looking at putting this show together, and I'm influenced by things that either I read or I see or people that I meet. Now, the topic of the show today is, can you clearly communicate a good message? Okay, and one of those very clear messages, building on last week's show of loyalty, I used to work for a company and have known a chap over the years, and we bumped into each other having coffee, and he was telling me and giving me an update of things that were going on with him, and I was so struck with what he told me. So I said, Al, we've got to talk. Now, my good friend Al Corcoran is a domain expert in the art of delivering customer retention and loyalty into the industrial world. And he is a guy that will make good on promises that he makes, and more importantly, what his sales organization makes. So over the last 35 years, Al has been deeply involved in supporting manufacturing industries, and he understands better than anyone what companies that have huge capital infrastructure expect from vendors. And so without any more words, Al, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Malcolm. Thank you very much.
Hey, very good. And hopefully that, I know that intro doesn't do it justice, but I get emotional when I talk about this stuff. So, and as I said, I've known you for many years and always been impressed with your appreciation for customers and your sincerity to customers and their business. And we know that you earn loyalty, and it should never ever be treated lightly. Now, the story the story you told me, and I'll set this up now. Al left a employment, a very secure employment with a very large company, pretty much to follow customers. You know, did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and the drivers for me, Malcolm, is really kind of, I guess two components. Is there's the professional and the emotional side of it. And the one, you know, on the professional side, what attracted me to Prime Metals was the process know-how. Okay, and that, I think it's difficult today for companies to differentiate themselves just based on product. You know, just recently, and I won't name the customer, it wasn't a metals customer.
If we could back up one, you mentioned Prime Metals. Could you just set the scene who they are and what they do?
Prime Metals is a joint venture between Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and Siemens. My current role is I'm the Director of Technological Services covering the Americas.
Okay. Right.
So where it was, you know, I was just in the, on the product side of the business, which is kind of where I was before. I recently came across a situation where a customer had actually repaired the output phase of a 30 megawatt drive system. 10 years ago, there would have been a team of engineers there. So some of that, the real to get customer wow from the product service side is getting more and more difficult. The expectations are very high and everybody's performing high. Primetals, with that process knowledge, you can really wow your customers. And that's, you know, when you combine the two, it looked very attractive to me. And the best days in the office, me on the emotional side, are always the days where I've helped the customer. You know, if we've worked and gathered people and resources and talent together to work on a problem, and, you know, it could be the middle of the night, but, you know, say during the day, and we get the customer up and running, that's when I feel like I've earned the money that I'm, you know, getting from my employer. So, you know, it's those two pieces that caused me to move over. And I'm very excited, and I'm glad I've never asked the, you know, why did I make the change question myself.
Okay. I just had a message from the control room saying we had a bit of a glitch there. I'll just recap this. That Primetals is a company with expertise in the metal processing technology world. So if you want to build a steel plant and you want a partner that can support you with the technology and understanding of the process, and then the pieces and the you know, the machine control and everything to take it from raw materials to turn it into the goods that you're going to put into a car or a washing machine, Primetals is the company that provides that support and infrastructure, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Now, what's going to be different at this new company than where you came from?
So, you know, fundamentally, we're a more nimble organization. So, lower inertia, more widely dispersed, closer to our customers, which in the industrial service market is critical, right? In that, in a lot of cases, you can do remote diagnostics, but when it comes down to specialized hardware replacements, these sorts of things, we're there. Where our customers are located. I think the other big difference is again, to repeat, the process know-how. And in the age today of big data, right, where for all of the products there's enormous amounts of data available, how do you give that data context? You know, if you look at a particular performance curve of a product, if you don't know the process, it's really hard to make a determination. So I think combining the context of that we insights that we get from knowing the process with the products is going to make a huge difference. It's going to make some great service offerings. We're also a direct business, and you know, in my prior careers, you know, I've been moving between end user and distribution channels, and it's very difficult in the distribution market to really get to that customer wow. So I think it, you know, the main difference is going to be intimate, and we are intimate with our customers, with their processes and their business and their markets, and much more focused.
Now, when we were talking, you mentioned one thing that really sort of struck a chord with me. You weren't always attuned to this, and there was at one point that a few years back you had this sort of aha moment. I think
yes.
I know what these customers really
okay.
are asking for.
Yeah. So a couple of years into my career, so this would have been back in the mid-80s, I was up in Toronto, Canada, and my employer at the time sent me to a customer satisfaction seminar, and a very large equipment manufacturer was up presenting. And the case they presented was, you know, every year they went through and they surveyed their customers on 11 or 12 attributes: engineering, delivery, you know, service, spare parts, various aspects. And one of the questions was, you know, your intent to repurchase. And what they did year after year, they went and they looked at, okay, which was the lowest rated item, and then they'd get teams together and initiatives and then measure the next year and say, ah, see, success, because that one was, you know, only 12% accepted before, and now it's 70%. Mm. Well, what this gentleman did was he looked at, you know, he kind of took a big data approach back in the 80s, like many of us did. He looked at the customers said, okay, I am going to buy your product next time I have a need. And he said, okay, that's the ones, the retention that we're interested in. And what they found was that the customers that were at 80% and higher in that category had also all had a service problem. and they had marked that service problem as, you know, at 100% for meeting their expectations. And so, you know, it just, what it reinforced in me was that the retention that you can grab from service, and that, you know, customers, they're not going to judge you by a failure. That happens to everybody. Now, if you have 10 in a week, that's a problem. But they will judge you based on how you respond to the problem. We all have equal opportunity to respond. And if you respond the right way and make the customer happy, you drive loyalty. And that was – I carried that with me, and I still actually have the book. It's a yellowed around the edges, but I still have everything from that particular event. It was an eye-opener.
Hey, Al, we are yellowed around the edges. That's what you get in industry. You know, it's
yes, that's right.
Okay. Now, and I suppose an analogy for folks that are listening out there that are not from the steel world, it's you got a problem with a new washing machine or a new plumbing system or whatever. If you get response and you're helped, you understand, you get over it. But when you repeatedly call in and somebody says, hey, I'm going to do something, and they just don't do it. You know, that is so blooming annoying. So, all right. Now, we're going to get running up to a break before we know it. And as we said, you know, this stuff moves quick. Quickly, what sort of advice would you give out to business owners about building an after-sales service business, understanding that loyalty is the key? And what we mean by loyalty is, look, they're going to say good things about you when you're not there, and they're going to consistently come back when they have a choice. Have we got three things for us?
I think the key things is you need to understand your customer drivers and then understand where your service offering fits in your business. Ultimately, you know, you should expect to make some money off of service. There's no question. But there may be aspects of your service offering. And when I talk service, I'm talking online support, tech support, field service, spare parts, repairs. There may be aspects of that are really high value to your customer that aren't that high volume for you, and you can actually get much more mileage by making that a very, very attractive offer to them. So it's really lining up your offering to your customers' drivers and understand where it fits. And I think you had said in the lead into the question, Malcolm, is that retention piece, service, good service attracts money. If you're not getting it on the service call, you're getting it through increased market share and customer retention, where you're not having to take in account acquisition costs time after time, and it makes your sales guy's life a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think I've said it on the show over the weeks that it's, you know, it's not. Companies that sell stuff, companies deliver. It's people that sell, and it's that initial, you know, hey, I like this guy, I'm going to listen to what he's saying, and now I'm going to judge him on his actions.
And, right. And when you find no more trusted advisor, you know, to use that term, than the engineer that shows up when the plant's down.
Yeah, and he gets hugged when it's up and running again. Okay, well, look, we're going to get up to a commercial break. If you want to stick with us, we'd love to. Who knows? We usually get some questions come in, and who knows? It might be one of those people out there who's actually been wanting to build a steel plant for a while. Okay.
Well, I'm all ears.
All right. Okay, Matt, hand you back now, so we'll go pay the bills and listen to what the guy's voice is and our products are all about. Bye.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Ever heard this from your sales team?
The customer has not replied to my email.
Individuals, corporations, or national teams in multi-level marketing, stop taking chances in the inbox. Accentuate is an easy-to-use, quick-to-learn, self-marketing game changer built with your sales needs in mind. It'll help you stand out, get noticed, close deals, and more quickly build relationships. Stunning emails and newsletters built and delivered in moments. Track who opened them and then see what links were clicked or which file was downloaded. Say thanks. Send a personalized gift card right from your desk. Don't let your team team rely on the same tools from the 90s that your worst competitor uses, or some system that an intern built? Accentuate is your new secret weapon in the inbox wars. Stand out, get noticed, and be remembered. Get your emails opened first. Users love it. So do customers. It is quick to set up and no contract is required. See for yourself. Take the 30-day risk-free trial. Visit Accentuate.com. Accentuate your brand and message right to the customer's inbox. AXENTUATE.com.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Stand Up, Stand Out, or Stand Down. To reach Malcolm Evans or his guest today, please call into our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to malcolm@accentuate.com. Now, back to the show.
And a very good afternoon or good morning, wherever you are in the world. My name is Malcolm Evans, and I am the Sales Accent Guy. If you've been following me on social media, you'll find me at Sales Accent Guy out on Twitter. The theme of today's show is really doing what you say you're going to do, communicating with confidence, and being able to follow up on some of the promises you make. Now, over this last 10 minutes, we've been listening to Al talk about how important it is in the world of industry and why what he does, and if he didn't say it, it's critical to what we do in this country. Our manufacturing industries rely on people like Al. So he's quite a special guy. Now, at the other end of it, now we pictured this, you're going to go build a steel plant. If you wanted somebody to position your value and why somebody should choose you as a partner, my next guest is probably the guy you want to have in the room. With securities market experience in capital raising, advisory leadership, Oren is the director of capital markets at investment bank Intersection Capital. Now, since 2005, Oren has grown a firm with a history of approximately $2 billion in aggregated trade volume across a whole bunch of different companies and transactions. He's responsible for business development and product development and oversees the firm's flagship product, the Velocity method of corporate finance. Now, this gentleman is a pioneer. Now, I was introduced to him by a friend a few years back, and he said, you've got to go read this book. The book is called Pitch Anything, and since I picked it up, I've been wanting to ask Oren some questions around this book. Now, if you've not heard of the book, I encourage you to go to my webpage or go to Amazon and look for Pitch Anything. Now, when you open the book up, it's very helpful here. He says, the big idea in 76 words. And I'll read this because it's 76 words. There is a fundamental disconnect between the way we pitch anything and the way it is received by our audience. As a result, at the crucial moment when it is most important to be convincing, 9 out of 10 times we are not. Our most important messages have a surprisingly low chance of getting through. You need to understand why this disconnect occurs in order to overcome it, to succeed and to profit. Now, this book will tell you how. Oren, are you on the line with us?
I am. I am here, and I believe we are all live.
All live.
Yes. This
completely unplugged live. We do everything in real time here. You're out in San Diego, correct?
Yeah, we're in North County, San Diego, just south of Los Angeles, where we also have an office, and sitting around here doing the Lord's work of making as much money as possible in the shortest amount of time with hopefully the least amount of effort.
Well, you just said two things that a lot of people up in the north are really envious about, you know, the cold and, you know, they're all about making money. Now, just a little bit, we had a little chance to talk earlier. You know, ever since I got into sales in the early 80s, I came out of engineering as a, you know, on the tools. I went into sales, and I've always had an interest in the psychology of selling, you know, the body language, and you know, the people at the time were the likes of, you know, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar. More recently, I've got into the messages that Jeffrey Gittimer's given out, really, because they're straightforward and direct, and I can understand them. Now, that is what I found with your book. You know, when I started reading, you know, I've got to say, you grabbed my attention, you know, right from the get-go. And I, you know, from the start, I've been a convert. You know, the communication and sales is a social interaction. And you take it a bit further in the book, and you break this down into saying why we need, you know, to understand some of these primeval behaviors that are going on in the background. Have I teed that up?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I like this word primeval. That's a good way to jump in to the conversation, because if you think about Zig Ziglar, who, you know, the times of sands have moved on, and Jeffrey and those guys, I mean, that's very linear kind of features benefit selling. I will give you this truck, or this forklift, right, is able to lift 2,000 pounds, and we paint it in blue or yellow. If you could get it in yellow, would you want it? Right, and so it's very linear. And yes, it's factual. It's helpful for buyers to understand when you explain features and benefits in this way. And by the way, if you buy our forklift, it will save you money. Your ROI will be that you'll save $3,000 a year. And oh my gosh, you're not going to believe this. It pays for itself. So that is a form of selling. And it is a form of convincing through information. But if you go back to, you know, how does it affect you from a primeval standpoint, you know you're being sold, right? And that is the feeling of sort of being hunted, okay, is where when a salesperson is putting pressure, you walk into a retail store or you walk into a car lot and the salesman comes up and all of a sudden you feel cornered, right? And he starts giving you features and you know you're getting backed in the corner. He starts, you know, asking you questions about your life and he starts giving you benefits. And now you feel like you're being backed in a further corner, you're being hunted. This is the feeling of being chased, hunted, locked down, and controlled. And on a primeval basis, it's not fun for us and it's not fun for sellers. So I don't like selling like that on a pure linear corner somebody basis. And I think CEOs, engineers, executives, you know, anybody other than real retail salesmen don't like doing that. So the question is there a better, more natural, more effective way to sell than backing somebody in a corner and trying to leverage them into a purchase?
Yeah, it's almost, you know, it's like we're ambushing these people. And over the years, you know, buyers and just people that are on the other side of the, you know, receiving the messages from salespeople, I've got wise to this, and they just don't put up with it any longer. You know,
you see it coming a mile away. And yeah. Another thing is, on large deals, it doesn't work, right? Yeah. So, you know, if you're selling a $20 million deal over a couple month period of time, in which there are multiple contact points, in which you have to present to a committee, the CEO, CFO, COO, and purchasing department have to sign off, you're not going to get away with that stuff. So here's what I would say. You can't sell big deals. You have to attract the buyer to your deal, right? It has to be the most attractive deal to do. You're never going to sell them on your deal.
Now, you make it clear in the book, and you put, I have a page devoted to this, that, you know, you're not a salesman. You know, this didn't come natural to you, but you get more success than others in your field and your contemporaries because you have a good solid method.
Yeah, so correct? So I think there's two totally different states. There's chasing and there's attracting, and they don't coexist,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I thought about, you know, in my early career, I chased clients and you know, I let them know that I would bend over backwards and they can call me on Sunday, you know, afternoon if needed, and I would do anything to win their business, and if they would accept my pitch and our deal and sign on the contract, and that they would be the most important customer, you know, that I had, and I would do anything to support them, and they would be so happy that they signed the agreement with me, right? And that is chasing, and it's neediness. Yeah. And what we discover is neediness kills deals. When you're needy, people feel like they have you under control, and then they want to go, and you're an option. And now they want to go find a lower price, better vendor because they always have you as an option.
Sorry to cut across you. I want to come back to that a little bit later because that is so key and critical and important. And I see so many salespeople always groveling for business that there's blood in the water. People just – it only ends up in price then. So, okay. Now one bit I'd like to ask you about, you tell us in the book that, you know, what's going on now when we say we have a scenario where we're in a formalized environment or whatever, and we want to give a PowerPoint presentation to people. That you tell us what's going on in the brain. Now, there's three parts to the brain. And we've got to understand the makeup of the brain and how it processes information and evaluates it, because so often when we communicate, we get our wires crossed between the transmitter and the receiver. If you could just explain a bit about that.
Well, sure. I mean, I think if you're an executive in a business and you sell something complicated, you know, whether it's software or accounting or services or consulting services or even, you know, hard goods, you know, you're a smart guy and you know a lot about human psychology. Most people have had, you know, enough psychology in college or read enough sales books to have a, you know, pretty good understanding. And I felt like I was that way as well. But still, I was not able to sell at the level that I knew was possible. And I actually hired a cognitive psychologist to look at some of my pitches. And he came back and said, "You don't understand the brain." And I go, "No, I studied psychology and I read all these books and I took a ton of psychology classes at in college and followed on in that work. I understand psychology." He says, "No, you don't understand the brain, right? How information actually physically gets into the mind of another human being and how they process physically through the mechanics of the brain that information. Once you understand that, you'll be in a better position to get people to want what you have." So I said, "Okay, well, tell me physically, how does the brain work?" He says, "Well, look, you do all of your thinking, your smart problem-solving, mathematical, linguistics, deciding what job to do and how to do that job and what car to buy and when problems come up at work, you know, how to solve those problems. That's all in the neocortex, which is one part of your mind. In fact, that was the last part of the mind or the brain to develop. The first part of the brain to develop in humans was the croc brain or the brainstem, and that is where all information first enters the mind. It's that lower part of the brain that's near the base of your skull, and that part of the brain is not very sophisticated, but yet it receives all information first. The part of your mind that is smart, the neocortex, is the last to receive information. All information comes through the croc brain, and that part of the brain only thinks three things. You meet another person, you start to tell them about your product, your ROI, your software, your services, whatever it is you have, and they're only thinking with the mechanical part of the brain three things. Is this something I should eat? Is this something I should mate with? Is this something I should kill? So you're trying to explain what you have, and they're having very, very fundamental thoughts about you and what you have. And ultimately, the problem is that truncates most of the detail about what you're talking about, and it doesn't get passed up. This is why you know fundamentally, if you start off with too much detail, it is not absorbed by the mind of another person.
It's, you know, we've been talking over the weeks about how you can get your feelings hurt in sales, and you've got to be prepared for this, and you've got to, you know, you've just got to toughen yourself up. You know, it could also be a little bit more dangerous. You could get eaten. You could get asked out on a date or something. So there's other things going on as well. But,
I would follow up on that. So the three parts of the brain, the croc brain, right? Very primitive, but is focused on survival. It's the first part of the brain that gets information from any source whatsoever, and it clips that information dramatically. The next part of the brain to get information from you is not the neocortex, it's the midbrain. And the midbrain is social, right? And it understands who's a policeman, who's a janitor, who's a boss, who's a neighbor, who's a visitor from another country, and it understands where you are on the social totem pole. And it only ascribes value to information coming from someone else of high status. All right? So the midbrain tries to evaluate who the person talking to you, what their status is. And if it thinks their status is low, Malcolm, if the midbrain thinks your status is low, it doesn't pay much attention to you. And if it thinks your status is very high, you're the president of the United States, you're the mayor, you're the boss, you're the head of the company, there's somebody whose decisions can affect your life, then it pays a lot of attention. And once information gets to the midbrain, only then does it get to the neocortex where actual thinking and decisions are made. So it's got to come up to the croc brain. It can't be frightening. It can't be make the it's got to be new and interesting and make the croc brain feel safe enough to pass the information up to the midbrain. When you and your information get up to the midbrain, you have to be a person of high status, and that information needs to be simple. And only then are you given access to the neocortex, and then you can lay on the detail, the nuance, the return on investments, the features, and the benefits.
Now, that's from the receiving side, but so often, and we've all been there, we're trying to get the spelling right, we're trying to get the graphs right in our presentation. We come at it from a very analytical, data-driven thing. And from what I interpreted from the book is I'm up here communicating from the neocortex, expecting the message to get through because it's full of data, but the crocodile brain being lazy says, nah, too much, I'm going to shut down a little bit.
Well, I think the way to summarize that, and you can tattoo this on your arm, information has no convincing power, all right? So giving people – if you need to give people information, put it in a FedEx package and send it to them. That's how you deliver information, you know, or put it in a PDF and email it to, right? What is convincing to people is big ideas, your ability to solve difficult problems, and the understanding that you're a person of high status. When you set up presentations in that way, big idea in which there are high stakes and things are changing, and you understand how the world is changing, and those changes have stakes, and you provide a narrative, that a storyline that shows that you understand the problems that the buyer has, right? Then and only then you kind of have permission to give information about solutions. Information has no convincing power. Stories, narratives, big ideas, high stakes and change, that's what convinces people to A, pay attention to you, and B, to want the things you have.
Now, you know, it doesn't always go that easy. Even, you know, you describe something that is difficult in itself, but you get in a room and you've got a bunch of very powerful people. You say, well, do they consider me as an equal or a lesser? You know, the whole alpha beta thing is coming in from the, you know, almost like a pack mentality. Now, your approach is, you know, as I interpreted it, you've got to state your claim. You've got to say, guys, this is why I'm here. You know, this is what I'm going to be doing. And, you know, you've almost got to earn it from me. Now, if you use the STRONG method, you know, STRONG being the acronym you've built, could you just share that, expand on it a little bit?
And sure. Let me just lay some foundation for that, right? To the degree that you can hold somebody's attention, you can convince them. Okay. The problem is attention spans are very, very short. They might be 30 seconds, 60 seconds. By any stretch of the imagination, they're 20 minutes long. You're not going to hold somebody's attention beyond, you know, in a pitch, in a sales presentation, in a business meeting, beyond that 20 minutes. Their mind just gets tired. They can't hold a consistent level of thinking, you know, beyond 20 minutes. Okay, so how do you get somebody's attention? Well, one very critical way to get someone and hold somebody's attention is their understanding that you're a person of high status. So I got to dwell on that for a minute before we get into strong and say there's only three real forms of status: power, the President of the United States; celebrity, Brad Pitt; and wealth. So you say, you know, Warren Buffett. Okay, and that's status. People understand that status. That's why psychologists call it real status. So you have to come up with a fourth form of status in order that people will believe, pay attention to you long enough to believe the things you are saying are true about your product and services. And so in order to get that status, you have to position yourself, I believe, as somebody who knows how things in the industry are changing. Right, because people who know what's going to happen in the future have the highest status of anyone. And so if you can explain what the trend lines are in a way that's new, interesting, novel, and valuable, and where things are headed, that forces people to believe you're a person of high status, and that forces people to pay attention to you. And now you can use a method, which we said the strong method we can go over if you want, to really once you have their attention, to tell them the story of what you have. But first, you need them to believe you're a person of high status, and you need them paying attention to you. Then you tell your story in a certain framework, and you can really sell the products and services that you have in a way that, that they're chasing you and you're not chasing them.
Mm. Okay. And, you know, I've said this over the weeks, you know, if you're going to stand up in front of a room full of people, just do a quick assessment of who's in the room, look at their titles and try and calculate how much an hour that meeting is costing them. And then look at yourself. Are you prepared? You know, are your shoes clean? Are you dressed appropriate? Is your hair cut? You know, are your nails and so on? Because we had a lady on a while back, Sylvie DeGusto, told a story about how a lady didn't get a job because of she was unkempt fingernails. They just didn't fit in with the style of her new boss. So small things can you know, devalue all of the hard work that's been put in. Okay. Now, this one thing you mentioned in the book as well, and I'm not sure if you're going to continue on with the strong method.
So, okay. So I think once you have people paying attention to you, right? So if you think about walking into a room, right, to give a pitch, there's some people staring back at you. We sell again forklifts. Some folks staring back at you and saying, okay, you know, tell us what you have. And I think it's important to say, listen, you know, here's the big idea. Forklifts are forklifts. They move material around. But today, with the world being connected, right, the ability to understand how much material is going to be moved in your warehouse and what that means to the overall organization, that affects profitability. And a forklift is a piece of the profit model. And today, if you could have forklifts that knew how much work they were going to do during the day and report that information back and report what their maintenance uptime and downtime will be back to, you know, central planning, then you would have a strategic advantage over your competition. And a forklift today is a competitive advantage, not just a tool of the market. So if you could tell some, you know, I just made that up on the spot, but if you could put what you have, whatever it is, in context of high stakes, big idea, and the overall business, then, right, you can have people paying attention to you. And so we would call that in the strong method, setting the frame. That's S, set the frame. It's giving people a bigger perspective than just the features of your product. How does this fit in the bigger picture? Why is this a high stakes decision? Why is this important? And so setting the frame that it's in this meeting, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn how things are changing in the market and why a forklift is more than just a decision about wheels and what brand to get, that it's an impact on profit. And that makes people stop eating their sandwiches, put their phone down, and pay attention to you. And as we said, attention equals convincing power. So after you set the frame, okay, then you move in strong. So S, set the frame. T, tell the story, right? And that is really the pitch about what you have. And so pitches, I think, are you can think about telling the story, not as a story, and you know, the way you think of most business stories that you know, so not the kind of story that we think about, you know, we went to a customer and the customer really liked our product and then we installed it and they were very happy and the product did what he said. You know, that's the way most people think of a story. For me, T, tell the story, is about getting the problem and the solution right. What most people do is they come in and they start talking about the solution, what they have, the features of it, the benefits. So you talk about Jeffrey Gitomer and Zig Ziglar and Tom Hopkins and, you know, these kinds of folks, right? They immediately dive into the solution, what it is. But I don't believe the buyers care that much about the solution. They want to know if you understand the problem. So if you really want to sell, help people understand that you know their problem at a molecular level. From a, you know everything about the situation that they're dealing with, and you solve the kinds of problems that they have all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So if you convince people that you're extremely knowledgeable, capable, experienced, and deep, and can talk about their problem at length, then they will believe the solution that you deliver. So telling the story is about this sequence: problem, helping them understand that you know about these problems, and then the solution. When you tell somebody the solution and then start talking about the problem, they don't care, right? Once the solution is out, nobody wants to talk about problems. So telling the story is the right sequence: problem, then solution. So that's S, set the frame; T, tell the story, which is getting the problem and the solution right, and that's the ST in strong. Malcolm, does that make sense?
Yeah, certainly. And when people pick the book up and start reading this, the flow of it becomes very logical and apparent, and one layer builds on another. So, yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, it takes some time to set the frame and tell the story, you know, give the big idea. Equipment is more than equipment. It is really part of your profit model. The problem today is forklifts can break at the most inopportune moments. Right. And so, for example, if you have an piece of equipment go down during a critical customer shipment, these kinds of negative things can happen. It can be difficult to get, replacement parts, and the parts are expensive. You know, when you really understand the problem, then you deliver the solution. That might take 15 or 20 minutes to get through all of that. Right now, as I said in the beginning, your prospect is tired. Right. They've had to, because you've taxed them. You've told them a new, interesting, novel, things about their industry and about your product, and they're starting to get tired. You've used their brain, right, which doesn't have infinite capability. You've made your presentation safe for the croc brain. You've explained your status and you've taxed their midbrain to understand that you're a person of high status and they should pay attention to you. And then you've told them some new, novel, interesting things to their neocortex, the third part of the brain, and that has caused them to think hard about what you have, and they're just tired. So the third step in strong is to reveal the intrigue. So what intrigue does is something, you know, gets people reinvigorated, kind of restarts, puts more dopamine into their mind. It tells them something that they're excited to hear about. Right? So if I gave you the pitch on the forklifts, and then I said, you know, it reminds me of the time that Kobe Bryant came to our warehouse, jumped on, you know what, I'll tell you about that later. Then the brain goes, no, I want to hear about Kobe Bryant and the forklift. And they're sort of reinvigorated in a story. So reveal some intrigue is the R in strong. It restarts a tired brain to get excited about something so they don't feel like they've got all the information out of you already, and there's still some reason for you to be in the room, right? Because after you've told the problem and the solution, the features and the benefits and how it works and the value proposition, buyers just want you to leave. So if you drop some intrigue, then they want you to stay so they can hear about Kobe Bryant and the forklift.
Right. Okay, now's the point where you reel them in. You set the hook.
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, if you've done all of that properly, right, then what you'll see is buyers start wanting what you have and you don't have to sell them, right? And they start making suggestions to you, you know, asking suggestive questions about how you can help them. And now you've really reached the hook point, and then you can offer them the deal. And I think what you see here, you know, the O in strong is to offer the deal. Then sort of Zig Ziglar might walk in and into a room and 2 minutes later be offering the deal. In my system, you know, in a 1 hour meeting, we're maybe at minute 35, 40, right? So we're 75% through the meeting and the presentation. And it's the first time we've really offered the buyer anything, because I feel like the job number one is to make them want what you have and believe and understand that you're a person of high status and that you're not going to beg them for the deal, right? Yeah. If you accomplish those things, then you can offer them a proposal and a package. If you offer, you know, if you offer what you have, if you offer a price and if you offer a package and you offer a proposal before people want what you have, believe you're a person of high status and are excited about continuing to spend time with you, then it will fall flat.
Okay. If we're going to run out of time, and I know we should have tried and got another half an hour today, but that was not going to be possible. If you can clip through the last two pieces, and I will stress that people have got to go pick this book up. This is going to be the best read you're going to do this year. There's I've just had something from the control room. We've got a guy on hold that wants to call in that's actually got a live case that he's he used your approach.
Oh, great.
In closing a big deal.
Let's talk to him.
Yeah. Okay. Should we bring him in?
Yeah. I'm all for it.
Okay.
Hey.
Hello.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey,
is this Andy?
This is Andy. Hey, I'm really happy to finally meet you. I read your book quite a while ago. It was given to me as a gift. And as soon as I finished reading it, I went to meet with a very, very large customer, a huge insurance company, and I met with one of their top guys. I was nobody. He's literally yawning in the back of the room. And so I had a slide kind of expecting this, having read your book. I expected this, and I had a picture. It was, the company is Transamerica, and their most important building is the Pyramid out in San Francisco. So I had the windows from Coit Tower, which is this beautiful monument that looks down on the Transamerica Pyramid. I had blacked out the windows in the photo, and I said, does anybody in the room know what building this is and what the view out the windows is? And nobody knew. So I pointed at the guy. I said, of all people in this room, I would think that you would know. And he laughed, and he said, no idea. So I changed the photo, and it was a Transamerica building. And he literally stood up and said, I cannot believe I didn't know that. For the rest of the meeting, he was standing, and I did a little bit of personal one-on-one demo with the product, our product, with him. And from then on, I had the highest level of intention just by challenging the guy. And I would not have even thought to do that had I not just read your book. And so my question, first of all, I want to thank you. And I wanted to say that are there any other great examples that you've heard, just real-world examples that you've done personally that maybe are not in the book, or other great stories that you've heard of people using some of your concepts to get great results?
Yeah, sure. No, that's terrific. I mean, I think what you did there is you demonstrated non-neediness, a couple things, right? So you demonstrated that you're not needy and you don't need this deal and you're not going to, you know, do whatever the prescribed sales method is, and that you're an individual of high status that is conducting a meeting on their own terms. And that made people listen to you, right? The other thing is you introduced novel, like once you did that, they were sort of on tenterhooks. They couldn't guess what was going to happen next in the meeting. And when people don't know what's going to happen next, they pay attention, right? And so you captured their attention. You did a great job. Listen, I think what I hear people doing that is working is letting it, you know, is coming in and taking control of the agenda in a professional way pretty quickly. So large companies like Transamerica want to tell you about themselves, right? You come in the meeting, and Andy's had experience, you know, they want to tell you how big they are and how, you know, everything that they're up to and how they're impacting the, you know, the global economic scales, right? And so I think what I hear people doing is saying, stop. Transamerica, why don't you hold on to your thoughts for a minute? Let me tell you about our product and our service. You're so big, you've done so many amazing things, and you affect so many different industries. It would just be impossible in the time we have here today for you to really fully tell me about yourselves. Why don't I pitch you our product, our forklifts, right, and the specific things that we have. I'll do that in 20 minutes or less, and then I'll let you, and that's important languaging, I'll let you tell me about what you have in context of our product. You know, and tell me what's going on with Transamerica in context of what we're doing. And then let's see if our circles overlap and if it makes any sense to go forward together, or if you should just call me a cab and I'll bolt out of here and leave you guys to your business. So that, I think that kind of framing is very powerful to stop large companies in their tracks. Sorry, guys, we produced a glitch, and the glitch is unglitched. So that's the kind of thing you need to do to get large companies understanding that you don't want to hear their whole story. You don't want them to lord over you. You're not going to discount for them just because they're big, and that you know how to control the agenda, and that they're going to get a lot of value out of this meeting. And then they're in the presence of a professional pitch person who knows how to get them all the information they need and make this 1 hour that we're spending together useful, manageable, new, interesting, exciting, but most important – understanding that what you have is valuable, and that in that you have it and that they don't, and in order for them to get it, they have to give you money on a reasonable time frame. And so that's, you know, maybe there was more answer than question there. And to net it out, I would say, don't let big companies push you around and tell you how great they are. Stop them in their tracks and tell them, I'll let you tell me about your big company greatness in context of what we have.
I love it. And one thing I noticed is that once I started to use your principles, the top dog in the room, if there's more than one person, it will pull you out of the meeting, take you back into another room, and have more one-on-one casual conversation as a peer. It's amazing how they actually don't want to be that close to you or be that friendly with you around their other employees or executives. That's happened to me 2 or 3 times now since I've been using a lot of your principles, and I thought that was an interesting phenomenon.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, no, that's helpful to hear. And by the way, so Andy, if you want to email us, josh@pitchanything.com, then let us hook you up with some stuff, and would like to continue the dialogue with you.
Oh, absolutely. Appreciate you so much, and thank you, Malcolm, for having him on, and you guys, just greatly appreciate it. Take care.
Okay, yeah, great. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for calling in. We're getting pretty much out of time here, and there's a couple of pieces that I want to make sure that we cover is, where people can find more out about Oren and your website. I think it's pitchanything.com.
Yeah, sure, pitchanything.com. If you go to pitchanything.com/book, then you're going to find a lot of great stuff there, information about the book. And I would say ultimately, if you don't want to go into meetings and feel like you're selling, and you want those buyers going, I'm excited to work with you, I want what you have, and to start chasing you, and so you no longer want to feel needy, this is a good place to start, pitchanything.com/book.
Great. And there's one thing we've done here. We've purposely left out the N and G in the acronym, so they're going to have to go there to find out what the end of the story is.
Yeah, okay? That's great. So this strong method, I mean, you heard from a guy, dial in. I never heard of that guy before. And we get, you know, thousands of those stories, which is I read the book, I walked into my next meeting, and instead of me supplicating and begging the buyers for an account, I took control, and they started treating me as a peer, and I was able to change my relationship from, you know, needy salesman to person who's controlling the sale and making buyers want my products.
Yeah, and great. I'd like to thank you much. I just want to give Al, are you still there with us?
Yes, sir, Malcolm.
Okay, if those people are out there listening and they want to build a new steel plant, where can they find you?
Primemetals.com or find me on LinkedIn.
I want to build a steel plant. It's about the most fun thing I've heard of this month. Hey, at the end of the month, right?
That's, we should talk.
Exciting. Let's do it.
We should talk. Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you both. My name is Malcolm Evans. You can find me at salesaccent.com. We broke a couple of rules here today, but hey, that's what we'll try and do. So we skipped the adverts. I'll take that up with the sponsors. But please, if the core to what we have been talking about here today, building loyalty, developing relationships with customers, okay, a lot of it's about you communicate. So go out and take a look at our product, accentuate.com, accentuate.com. My name is Malcolm Evans. Listen in next week. We've got a great show lined up for you. If you've heard of anything of how the world sees you, or you want to understand how to communicate, you need to be listening. 313131, text the word accent, and you'll see what it's all about. I'm Malcolm Evans. Look forward to speaking to you next week.
Thanks for listening this week. Join us again for another edition of Stand Up, Stand Out, or Stand Down with Malcolm Evans, the Sales Accent Guy. We'll be back next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll see you again next week. Ever heard this from your sales team? The customer has not replied to my email. Individuals, corporations, or national teams in multi-level marketing, stop taking chances in the inbox. Accentuate is an easy-to-use, quick-to-learn, self-marketing game changer built with your sales needs in mind. It'll help you stand out, get noticed, close deals, and more quickly build relationships. Stunning emails and newsletters built and delivered in moments. Track who opened them and then see what links were clicked or which file was downloaded. Say thanks. Send a personalized gift card right from your desk. Don't let your team rely on the same tools from the 90s that your worst competitor uses or some system that an intern built. Accentuate is your new secret weapon in the inbox wars. Stand out, get noticed, and be remembered. Get your emails opened first. Users love it. So do customers. It is quick to set up and no contract is required. See for yourself. Take the 30-day risk-free trial. Visit accentuate.com. Accentuate your brand and message right to the customer's inbox. accentuate.com.